I want you to close your eyes for a second. Just visualize a classroom.
Okay.
We're in a secondary school in China, and at first glance, it looks totally standard. Rows of desks, books, a chalkboard.
Right, the usual setup.
But then you zoom in on the students, and you realize something is really, really wrong.
The headbands.
Every single kid in that room is wearing a headband, and I don't mean, a sweatband for gym
Okay,
class.
these look like industrial grade sensors, something out of a sci-fi dystopia.
Exactly. They're harnessed to the forehead, pressing against the temples, and these devices are lifting electromagnetic brainwaves directly from the scalp in real time.
It's called the Information Engineered Classroom.
And the visual alone is just enough to make your skin crawl.
It is jarring. You see these children, and they're physically tethered to a data collection system. It completely changes the vibe of education from, say, nurturing to mining.
And we're not just talking about recording the class. The function here is wild. The headband converts those brainwaves into a quantified focus score.
A focus score, right.
So the teacher's at the front of the room, and instead of just looking at faces to see who's bored, they're looking at a dashboard, a real-time report card of cognition.
It's a feedback loop of raw thought. The dashboard flags if a student is paying attention, if their mind is wandering.
Or if they're working hard, it lights up red if their focus drops.
Imagine that. You're 10 years old, and a red light flashes on a teacher's iPad every single time you daydream about lunch.
Okay, let's unpack this. Because the knee-jerk reaction for me, and I think for most people listening, is skepticism.
Sure.
We want to ask, does this junk actually work? Is a plastic headband really capturing focus, or is it just measuring if I'm wiggling my eyebrows?
And that is the instinct. We want to debunk the tech so we don't have to deal with the ethics of it.
Exactly.
But for this deep dive, we have to follow a specific rule. We are going to suspend that skepticism.
So we're just role-playing that the machine is perfect.
We have to. If we get bogged down in technical efficacy, debating signal-to-noise ratios, we miss the entire philosophical reality.
Okay.
We need to assume the machine works exactly as advertised. It reads the mind perfectly. We're doing this strictly to evaluate the ethical implications.
To look at how human experiences like being watched or learning get translated into ethical values.
Values like autonomy, privacy, and fairness, and to see if they can actually survive being turned into an algorithm.
So let's start with the big one, autonomy, the right to be free.
Or, maybe more specifically, the desire not to be a slave to a process.
Right. But we need to be careful with definitions here because freedom is such a slippery word, isn't it?
It is.
When we talk about autonomy in this classroom, we aren't talking about, the freedom to buy a car or to vote. We're talking about something more internal.
We're talking about autonomy as an intrinsic good. The idea that being self-directed is valuable in and of itself, regardless of what you actually do with that freedom.
So, looking at those kids in the headbands, how does this technology mess with that value?
Well, if you look at it from the student's immediate perspective, let's just call him Student X. The argument for what you might call electronic slavery is very strong.
Electronic
The
slavery.
headband represents a bondage, not just a physical one, but a cognitive one. The sensation of being constantly observed by the algorithm creates a constraint on his mind.
It effectively removes the ability to just drift. And let's be honest, intellectual drifting is a form of agency. It's the freedom to check out.
And this is what some philosophers call process freedom or operational freedom.
Okay.
It was the freedom of the moment, the freedom to decide right now I am going to stare out the window. And on this level, the tool acts as a shackle. It reduces human agency because Student X cannot choose to disengage without immediate detection.
And correction, his whole process for the day is rigidly controlled.
Exactly.
Okay, I get that. But I'm going to play devil's advocate here for a minute. Because I know a lot of people, myself included, who struggle with focus. I can doom scroll for 3 hours when I should be working.
We all do.
If I had a headband that buzzed me every time I got distracted, I might actually get my work done. Is that slavery or is that just a really good productivity tool?
That is the pivotal question. And that brings us to the counterargument. This is the teleological view.
Teleological, meaning you're looking at the telos, the end goal.
Exactly. Zoom out. Stop looking at the miserable kid in the chair and look at the trajectory of his life.
Okay.
If the tool forces attention, and we accept our premise that forced attention increases learning, then Student X absorbs more information. He masters the material faster. He gets better grades.
And better grades mean better college. Better college means a better job, more money, more leverage in society.
Correct. A student who masters the curriculum has more career choices, more economic mobility, more intellectual capability. So the argument is that the tool restricts operational freedom.
The freedom to daydream now.
To generate a massive increase in structural freedom later.
That is the paradox of the information engineered classroom then. It creates this tension between immediate experiential freedom and the long-term maximizing of opportunity.
It forces us to ask a really difficult utilitarian question. Is it ethical to sacrifice the autonomy of the child as subject to secure the autonomy of the adult as result?
See, that's tough. Because we do this to kids anyway, right?
In a way.
We send them to school. We tell them where to sit, what to read. We don't let them play video games all day. Is the headband really a difference in kind, or is it just a difference in degree? Is it just a really, really strict teacher?
I would argue it approaches a difference in kind because of the sheer intimacy of the surveillance. A strict teacher can watch you, but they can't be inside your head.
Right.
The headband crosses a barrier. But to really understand why that matters, we need to do what's called a boundary check.
A boundary check? What's that?
We need to distinguish the domains of the argument. It's easy to look at that classroom and have a dozen different criticisms, but not all of them are actually ethical criticisms. We tend to get them mixed up.
Okay, walk me through that.
Let's take the economist's view. Imagine a school principal or a budget committee looking at this system. What are they asking?
They're asking about the ROI. Is this cost effective? Is buying 30 of these headsets cheaper than hiring a second teacher to help the kids who are falling behind?
Right. And that is a perfectly valid question. It's a question of efficiency, of resource allocation.
Of course.
But that is not ethics. Even if it saves $1 million, it could still be a moral nightmare. The two are separate.
Okay, so that's the economist. What about the technologist?
The technologist looks at that dashboard and asks, how are the signals processed? Is the latency low enough? Is the Bluetooth connection stable?
Is the data even accurate?
Exactly. These are questions of function. But again, a machine can function perfectly and still be evil. A guillotine is a very functional machine, right?
Right.
The ethical view is strictly concerned with something else. It asks, does this make the human more or less free? Does it violate their dignity? We have to ruthlessly strip away the technical and economic complaints to see the moral architecture clearly.
So let's apply that ruthless ethical lens to the concept of privacy. Because when I saw that video of the kids, that was my gut reaction. I felt violated. But I need to be able to articulate why.
It goes back to the nature of the data flow. Let's go back to our student X. In a traditional classroom, if he is bored, he has to act bored for the teacher to know.
He might slump or doodle or look at the window.
Exactly.
And if he's smart, he learns how to fake it. He learns to nod at the right times while he's actually thinking about Minecraft.
Precisely. And that faking it is actually really, really important. It's an act of communication. The student controls the signal. He maintains a private internal narrative.
But the information engineered classroom changes that.
It changes the student from an active communicator to a passive subject.
A passive subject? That sounds so clinical, but it's actually terrifying when you think about it.
It means the student is not reporting how they feel. The machine is extracting it. It is mining the data directly from them.
That distinction, extraction versus reporting, that feels vital.
It is the absolute core of the violation. The transport of electromagnetic waves from the scalp to the teacher's screen bypasses the student's consent. It bypasses their ability to filter themselves.
It strips away the performance of the self. We all perform different versions of ourselves, don't we? I'm different with you than I am with my mother.
Of course.
Student X performs the role of attentive pupil. But this technology says, I don't care about your performance. I want your raw biological reality.
And that loss of control over one's internal narrative is a very specific type of privacy harm. It's not just about someone knowing something. It's about the loss of the ability to present yourself to the world. You become a data point first and a person second.
It's the transparency of the mind. And that feels so wrong because our minds are the last refuge we have. If I can't be private in my own skull, where can I be private?
Nowhere. And that leads us directly into the messy reality of how these data points are even generated.
Yeah.
Because if we're going to grade kids or judge them based on this data, we absolutely have to talk about fairness.
This is where the source material got really interesting and kind of bizarre, actually. It brings up this graduate level distinction between technical bias and ethical fairness.
Yes. And the example they use is the shape of a student's head.
It sounds like phrenology or something, but walk us through the actual scenario.
It's just simple physics. Suppose the sensor array is designed based on a standard skull model, probably based on the average dimensions of the test group, which might be, say, adult males of a specific ethnicity.
Okay.
Now, imagine a student, let's call her student Y, whose head shape deviates slightly from that norm. Maybe her forehead is narrower, or her hair texture prevents the sensor from sitting flush against the skin.
So the contact points aren't touching properly. The connection is bad.
Right. The signal is weaker or noisier. So the dashboard consistently reports that student Y is unfocused or struggling, not because her brain is wandering, but because the plastic doesn't fit her bone structure.
That is infuriating. So she's trying her absolute hardest, staring at an algebra equation, and the teacher comes over and says, "The machine says you aren't trying."
Exactly. Now, the technologist looks at that and says, "That's a bug. We need an adjustable strap. Mm. We need better sensitivity. We can fix this in version 2.0.
But the ethicist asks a completely different question.
The ethicist asks, at what point do these minute technical differences become a moral injustice? This is what's known as the line drawing problem.
Because no machine is perfect, right? 100% parity is impossible.
Correct. We know that no tool works equally well for everyone. There is always a margin of error. But if that error is distributed unevenly, if students with a certain skull shape or hair texture or skin tone are consistently misread, we have a massive fairness issue.
And if grades or praise or which academic track you get put on are attributed based on those attention scores,
then you are systematizing inequality. You are punishing a child for their biology. And the ethical work isn't fixing the machine. That's engineering. The ethical work is determining the acceptable range of error.
That's a tough concept. We act as if the goal is zero bias, but what you're saying is, practically speaking, we are always deciding how much inequality we're willing to tolerate.
That's the hard truth of it. If the machine has a 1% bias against a certain skull shape, is that ethically permissible? What about 5%? If student Y gets a B instead of an A because of that 1% bias, is the system fair enough? Because it helped the other 99 kids learn faster.
Wow.
Fairness is about deciding where that line sits. It is about the distribution of the burden of error.
And in this classroom, the burden of error falls entirely on the student. They can't prove they were focused. The screen says they weren't. The algorithm has an authority that supersedes the student's own testimony.
Which circles right back to dignity. To be told by a machine that you are not trying, when you know you are, is a specific kind of gaslighting. It invalidates the student's internal reality. It tells them, your feelings are wrong, the data is right.
That's devastating for a kid. It trains them to distrust their own mind.
It does. It fundamentally alters the relationship between the self and the world.
So we've looked at this through three lenses. We have autonomy, that trade-off between the electronic slavery of the headband and the freedom of future opportunity.
We have privacy, the shift from active reporting to passive extraction, the mining of the mind.
And we have fairness, the moral weight of technical imperfection and who pays the price for it.
And none of them are easily solved.
Yeah.
You can't just patch the ethical issues like you patch software code. These are fundamental conflicts of value.
The information engineered classroom isn't just some tech demo. It's a testing ground for how we value the human mind in the 21st century.
It forces us to decide what education is really for. Is it for the efficient transfer of data into a biological hard drive? If so, the headband is a triumph, the ultimate efficiency tool.
But if education is about the development of a self-governing person,
then the headband might be a total failure, even if it works, even if test scores go up.
Right. Because you might produce a brilliant mathematician who has no sense of internal agency.
Exactly.
That distinction data transfer versus self-governance is where I want to leave this. But before we go, I want to pose a question to you, the listener. We promised a profound choice.
The Sophie's choice of the algorithmic age.
We started by assuming the tech works, so let's stick to that. And I want you to really weigh this.
It's a choice between two competing goods. You cannot have both.
So here is the scenario. If we could guarantee, I mean, a 100% guarantee that this total surveillance state, this classroom of constant monitoring, would result in every single student achieving their maximum intellectual potential. If it could cure the education gap, solve illiteracy, and equip the next generation to solve cancer and climate change, would you sacrifice the privacy of the mind to achieve that social well-being?
Or is the sanctity of the unobserved thought, the right to drift, to daydream, to just be private within your own skull, is that worth more than the perfection of the result?
That's the trade. Privacy or perfection, you have to choose one.
And whichever one you choose, you lose something immense. That's where the ethics get real.